Hello and welcome to Ask the Mayor on WBAA. I'm Stan Jastrzebski. Thanks for being with us on the show this week. My guest is Lafayette Mayor Tony Rozworski. We appreciate you, as always, listening to the show. We should point out, though, that this episode has been pre-recorded, so we cannot take your phone calls this week. But remember, you can always email ask@wbaa.org if you've got questions for any of our four mayors, and you can tweet your questions at WBAA News on Twitter. Mr. Mayor, good afternoon.
Hey, Stan, how are you today?
I'm well, and I understand that it's a happy occasion that we're not able to talk to you live.
Yes, I appreciate your understanding and that of your listeners, but I have a daughter getting married this weekend, and so I'm going to need to be helping finish up some of those last-minute wedding details on Thursday and Friday for the big day Saturday. So thank you for helping accommodate my schedule.
Not at all, and congratulations to you, your daughter, and her fiancé.
All right, thank you very much.
Let's get into some of the questions. We got a number of questions on last week's show with Mayor Dennis about the fact that West Lafayette residents seem pretty unhappy with the new recycling setup after their facility on River Road closed. Now they've got to go to sites that are out in the county. One of those that got referenced a number of times is one that's just north of your city limits on North 9th Street. It's outside of Lafayette, but it's got, you know, some people up in arms. I just wondered what you had heard, if anything, about that situation.
Well, during the discussions about the potential closure, I mean, I think there was concern about particularly the folks that live in the county and use some of those satellite locations. And would they be able to handle the volume with the West Lafayette site closing, because people can drive in there, drop things off on the way to work and different things like that. And so I think there was, you know, those discussions and that potential concern, because fortunately in this community, in Lafayette, West Lafayette, and even into the county, you know, people do want to recycle, and that is something that they take seriously, and we're glad, because it is good for the environment. And from the Lafayette City side, where we do pick up recycling inside the city limits, as you know, we don't pay tipping fees when we drop that recycling off at the transfer station out on North 9th Street that you've alluded to. So that helps us control costs, good thing for the environment. And that's one of the ways, too, that we are able to keep trash pickup free without any additional monthly charge. And there's not a lot of communities left that don't charge an additional monthly charge for trash recycling pickup. And of course, we do leaves and limbs. So, you know, I have seen some of the comments in the paper, and that's certainly something I know the county is committed to, either trying to expand some satellite locations to handle that volume, or I don't want to speak for them, but maybe bring in some additional dumpsters. Because the way that we do recycling, it has not affected the city of Lafayette yet in any way, and I've not received any complaints to my office, and we'll continue to do the curbside recycling pickup that we do and take that out to the 9th Street transfer station there. And so we're going to continue to do that, and because it is an important piece of our overall environmental stewardship.
Do you think that causes any issues with the intermingling of recyclables from your city and county and West Lafayette residents, since now a lot more of that is being funneled to that transfer station on North 9th Street? Does that cause any issue in terms of who was responsible for it before it got there?
I understand the question, and it's a valid question, but the answer to that probably is no, because that is the county-wide transfer station, and they have the contract basically for the entire county. So even when Lafayette picks up recyclables and waste, that's where it goes. Same thing with West Lafayette on the curbside work that they have. That's where it goes. Those dumpsters, my guess, are that even at the satellite location, because that's the transfer station, that's where almost all that will go. We do have a small contract with waste management where we do take some of our recyclables and some of our trash, because it's a little bit closer for the southern and southwestern routes that we have in the city limits. But at the end of the day, regardless of where it's getting picked up, those are about the only two places that you can take that to get rid of it. And so, and Best Way actually has the contract with the city of Lafayette, with West Lafayette, and with Tippecanoe County. So wherever they got dropped off, most of them were ending up on 9th Street anyway.
One of the issues this has brought back to the fore is something that we've gotten questions about before, which is people writing in saying, we've gone to the transfer site ourselves to drop stuff off, and it seems like everything's getting intermingled. It doesn't seem like there's a lot of separation. They're concerned that things either aren't being recycled or are not being recycled the right way, because if you're mixing plastics with paper, with metals, things like that, you know, there's a process that, of course, needs to be done to separate all that out, because the recycling is done in different ways. How can people be reassured, if at all, that the recycling is still being done properly now that there is a greater volume that that kind of is being dropped off primarily by people there, and this is what they're seeing?
Well, I mean, certainly our contract that we have for the city of Lafayette talks about recycling and that how the recyclables will be used and disposed of. And I know that that company does have what's called I believe the proper terminology is a dirty MRF, and it's not at that location where they send, because we can co-mingle here, where they send the recyclables to be separated and do those types of things. Now, there has been concern, I mean, we all know it, that with China not buying near as many recyclables as they've had in the past, and the recycling market going up and down, that certainly is concern. And there are places where I've been told that they have said, place where they're not going to take the recyclables anymore. They can't get rid of them. Certainly they're not going to pay for recyclables. And that's one thing that we've never done here, which I think has been a good move for us. We've never asked to be paid for the recyclables. We just asked not to be charged to drop them off. And so,
which we should point out to people, was different than the model that West Lafayette had operated, where they had operated this facility where people would drop off the recyclables, but they were allowed to try to sell those and make back money to try to fund that facility, which, as we found out, was ultimately a losing financial venture for them.
Yeah, and it goes up and down, right? There was a time when we were dropping off recyclables that I'm sure they were doing very well, right? Cardboard was high, plastics were high, the recycling market was very, very strong, and they probably did well. And then during downturns, they're not doing as well, but they did well, but they're also not paying us for them. So, but there is still some cost, obviously, for the process. But that, for us, I feel like has been a good way for us to do it, and it's allowed us to stay steady and consistent. And I'm hoping in the global marketplace and the global need for recycling and new products and new processes that will hopefully be developed, we can continue to do that, because it's very important that we do recycle and we do reuse. And if we can even figure out how to create less waste to begin with as a country and a world, that's certainly things that we need to pursue.
This is Ask the Mayor on WBAA. We're talking today with Lafayette Mayor Tony Rozworski. This program has been pre-recorded, so we cannot take your phone calls this week, but you can always send emails for any of our four mayors to ask@wbaa.org. Your city's Board of Works did something interesting, and in some cases kind of rare this week. They actually rejected all of the bids for a project, in this case, one that would have resurfaced Beck Lane between 9th and 18th Streets. And the reason for that was that the bids, the couple of them, came in more than 110% of the engineer's estimate for the cost of that project. And these were from Milestone and Reith Riley, two big, well-established contracting companies that have done a lot of work, not just around here, but around Indiana. And I wanted to know, how did that come to be that, you know, you were, in some cases, it would have been 150% of the cost of what the city engineer's estimate for this program was. What's the discussion now about how this all proceeds?
Yeah, it's, it really boils down to a labor shortage. So, that project was the roadway, it was the curbs, the handicap ramp, sidewalks, and driveway approaches. So a mix of asphalt and concrete. And, you know, we're seeing that on several of the bids, that because of the shortage of labor, and there are so many projects out there, that the bids are coming in, very high. And I'll give you an example. The Teal Road, which is a state highway, you know, that bid was about a month ago now. Maybe, well, I guess we're in June, 2 months ago, and it came in almost double the engineer's estimate. So we've had, so the state rejected all of those bids, and it just really boils down to there's so much work out there, and the availability of labor, and then the time frames to get, you know, in Indiana you have a window of construction to try to get work done, that, you know, people are very nervous about their bids or how much overtime they're going to have to pay to get it done. And so you know, we're working on another bid package for July for a phase of streetscape downtown, and we're debating right now whether we bid that or not. The engineer that's working on that said they're not sure, because it's kind of a mid-sized project, maybe $1.5 to $2 million, something in there. They're concerned nobody will even bid on it.
So you're saying you might not even put out an RFP?
Right, because they said people are so busy, that project's not very big. They said, we're not sure that you'll get a, you said, and if you get a bid, it could be very high, and it's kind of like Beck Lane. Those projects we want to get done, but they are not critical to something else where we're going to pay double what we think we should be paying. We'll try to put them off. The problem with that too, though, is as we look around the state, and you know, you have, as you indicated, Milestone, Reith Riley, we get some other people to come in here that's big from time to time, but they're getting tied up, and others, and of course Reith Riley and Milestone do work all over the state, Indianapolis, Fort Wayne too. They're getting tied up in cities that are doing big projects too. We're a little concerned that even waiting, you know, just 6 months is probably not going to let the backlog get out. And so as our engineer said, we're going to look at repackaging Beck Lane, maybe break out the concrete work, break out the asphalt work, maybe so some smaller contractors could do part of it. And then a Milestone or Reith Riley would do the road, but not the concrete. Typically, you don't get as good a bids that way in a normal setting, right? Because one company can mobilize, they know they're getting all the work, they can time their people. But under this environment, breaking it up into smaller pieces might actually help us get a better bid. So lots of communities are facing this. I hear mayors all over talking about this and about the bids and the not getting as many bids and how high they are. But I don't see it getting better for a while. And so
is there any possibility that cities might need to change their estimating procedures? Because we know that there's a labor shortage in a number of different, especially manual labor type jobs, construction type jobs in Indiana, of which, you know, Indiana is a state that relies a lot on that particular type of workforce. Would cities maybe just have to adapt and as long as the state's labor shortage continues?
Well, the answer to that is there's still a finite amount of money that we have, right? So if we did that, you know, if we looked at it and said, okay, this is what we think it should be, and, you know, normally we'll go 10 to 15% over the estimate, we get that this whole piece is a labor shortage issue. But if it's so much over, then I think we can't just say, well, we know it's a labor shortage, so we're going to have to pay this. If we're going to do that, we're going to have to go back and literally restructure our 5, 10, 15-year plans, because if we spend four times what we thought we were going to spend on this, then this road that we've told everybody we're going to get done next year, we're not going to get done, because we can't raise that much money that quick, and that means this project's back too. And so,
well, but that seems like a logical conclusion. If the state's got a labor shortage, which we know for a fact it does, the governor's been talking a lot about ways that he would like to try to solve that. A lot of them, to be perfectly honest, haven't borne fruit yet. They're in pretty nascent stages. But, I mean, if we know that this is a problem for the state, it seems to make sense that it's going to trickle down and cities are going to be faced with hard choices, right?
We are. But I think what we would like to try first is a couple things. One, can we break what traditionally one big package, and that usually got you the best deal, can we break it down into some smaller packages that would allow some companies that aren't quite as big, that are still very busy, but maybe not so busy that they couldn't do pieces of it, and we could still make the overall dollar amount more reasonable into what we think is a reasonable range? or and I'm, it's not like I'm giving away a secret. I'm sure lots of cities are thinking the same thing. Can we stretch the windows and the timing of the bids and say, okay, we're going to bid this today, and normally we tell you it has to be done by this day. We're going to tell you now it doesn't have to be done until this day, 3 or 4 months. Give them additional time so they can allocate their resources looking at a larger window and see if that might help drive down the cost, because they can plan a little bit better and they can know, well, you know, if we got that much time, we're probably not going to have to pay a bunch of overtime, try to find people. You know, it's going to mean more orange barrels for longer periods of time out there probably on projects. But again, that might be the better solution than spending money that actually drives the projects back 2-3 years. And some of those roads, you know, really, really need that work.
Does a project like the Beck Lane project that you just had your city's Board of Works just turned down the bids on become more expensive the longer it sits without the construction happening?
Well, I mean, if you just look at inflation, I mean, if you say, well, concrete's going to go up next year, asphalt's going to go up next year, and most of the time it does. Sometimes it doesn't go up too much. There would be a time when that would be a very valid thing. Say, well, if it goes up 3% inflation, you're going to pay more anyway. But if the bid is 100 times over, you know, 100% over, then it still makes more sense maybe to stall it, repackage it, give them longer period of time, because that 3% down here is a much, much smaller number than the extra money you're being packed on, because they're not sure they can get it done in that window. They're not sure they can find the labor.
Paying
on
for
how
the
much
inflation is cheaper than paying for the labor shortage.
Right.
Okay.
Yes.
Speaking of construction, you've begun to award some bids for Loeb Stadium. This is something you and I have talked about the last couple of times you've been in. How's that process moving along?
Well, that process is we've awarded some of the bids, and we're going to reject some of them. That project did come in higher than the engineer's estimate, but not so high that we're not going to continue. And that's one that, like, that's different than Beck Lane, right? Beck Lane is open. There are sidewalks. There are drive approaches. We can keep going. The stadium's got to get built in a window, right? Because people have to find different places to play. So there is a definite window. So,
to say nothing of the fact that this is something we've talked about on this program for several years now,
right,
that you've been leading up to. And so it seems like there might almost be more pressure on the city because you've been saying, this is coming, this
yep.
is coming, this
yep.
is coming.
Yep, and we're going to do it. I mean, we're going to reject the scoreboard bid because it's higher than we thought. But a lot of the bids are. They were about $3.9 million above what the engineer's estimate was. Not all of that is above, because part of that is the road work and a traffic light and stuff that's going to benefit the whole park and stuff, and we knew that, but we wanted it in the bid so it would all be coordinated. But even if you take some of that out and the value engineering out that we're doing, you know, it's still going to be in that $2.5 million range. But we have managed our money well, and
so you're saying the bids, if I'm doing my back of the envelope in my head math real quick, bids came in somewhere between 10% and 20% more than you thought they would in total.
Yeah, in total, some of them were like 40% more, but some of them were lower, right? So, but yes, so but we knew that was a possibility, especially with the price of steel and the uncertainty in steel, and there's a lot of steel in the baseball stadium and a lot of concrete, and so We have the money in reserves, and I want to make it clear, as I did the other day at Board of Works, not in our rainy day fund. We're not touching our rainy day fund. We actually have edit reserves that we just don't budget the full amount each year that we can use. And then we'll take some out of the Columbian Park Master Plan. We put money in there for different things like the two new slides. One slide's coming out of the bond that we issued for the park, and the other slide's just coming out of cash that we put in a fund that's called the Columbian Park Master Plan to help get things done at the park. So the traffic light, different things like that, the road work that's around that helps all of it, we'll do that. So the stadium's stay on schedule. We're not changing anything of any significance that would diminish the flexibility of the stadium to be a multi-use stadium, that would change the appearance so it could be a gateway into downtown. We are making a few changes with the electric and stuff that nobody will see, that the contractors have seen a way that they can do it a little less expensive. But there won't be any significant changes, and it's going to move forward as soon as the Aviators' last game is done in August, and we hope they make it to the tournament championship, and they're playing for a while. But as soon as that last game is done, we'll start tearing down the stadium right on schedule.
So it sounds like the tariff disputes that are going on, which affect the steel industry in the United States, are coming home to where they're having to make you kind of relook at this project, which you've been talking about for years now, and go, well, what's actually possible now in this new economic reality that you couldn't have planned for 3-4 years ago when you announced
right.
this thing?
There's a lot of, you know, when you look at the labor shortage, the uncertainty of steel, and then other products. You know, I talked to a home builder the other day, and I said, how's things going? And he said, Tony, there's never been a better time to sell a home here since I've been doing this business, but there's never been a more expensive time to build a home because of labor, the cost of drywall, the cost of wood. I mean, there is just a lot of things happening in the global economy that affect prices that, you know, quite frankly, here locally, we don't have any control over it. But that stadium is one of those projects that are so critical, and we knew that. And you never know for sure what's going to happen, that we've made sure that we have plenty of reserve to get that done.
On to other projects. We talked a couple of years ago when a lot of the State Street redesign was done, and there were some heavy rains at that time about flooding that was happening in places that hadn't flooded before. The city responded by saying, all right, you know what, we're gonna build a couple extra underground tanks. We're going to do some other things that are flood mitigation efforts. We've had another very rainy spring this year. I wondered what you have learned from this round of heavy rains about what you might need to do, either add on to or augment from all of the weather we've had the past couple of months.
Well, as you know, Lafayette is a CSO community, a combined sewer overflow, and so we have a judicial agreement with EPA and IDEM to eliminate the amount of raw sewage that flows into the Wabash River. And one of the main ways of doing that is mitigating and working with stormwater and stormwater runoff. And so we have been doing numerous projects for the last, you know, 15 years now almost, and most recently finishing that giant underground storage tank, that 5 million gallon tank. It's not fully operational yet, but we're getting close.
Is water flowing into it
not,
yet?
Not, we're not holding water okay. into it yet. No, we're not. So that, the tunnel that we built underneath downtown, the Pearl River Lift Station, we're getting to now ready to do what's called the William Street project down by off of Wabash Avenue. And then you probably saw we're getting ready to award a bid for where we bought the Village Pantry there at 9th and South for the lift station and the storage that will take place there, about a $6 million project. And we'll be boring underneath the roads over to Valley into downtown to gather stormwater. So, you know, we've done a lot of work on stormwater and flood mitigation, and I think we're making, great progress. The other day when it rained, that torrential downpour, I mean, we do have water that stands for a short period of time, but we get rid of it pretty quickly. As you and I have talked before, we have had our rating increased at our wastewater treatment plant, so we're authorized to treat more water every hour and more water in a 24-hour period, which is huge for us from an environmental standpoint, but also from a economic development standpoint. So I feel like we're making, you know, great progress. Will you ever be able to have enough infrastructure that nothing will ever flood or streets won't hold water at all? No, because the size of pipes that would be required to do that for rains that happen very rarely would be so expensive, nobody'd want to pay their sewage bill, right? It would be astronomical. And so that's why the EPA lets us do what's called a bell of a curve, and you have to do certain sizes for 100-year rains, 500-year rains, and then at a point that cost is so great to say, well, what would it take for, you know, a 1,000-year rain? So nothing, then you can't afford to do that, and nobody can afford to pay their sewage bill and do that.
On to other things, I wanted to ask you about something that the West Lafayette City Council did, which was take a largely symbolic vote that contradicts the county's stance against the construction of wind farms. Has your city considered anything along those lines? Has this been brought up at all?
Well, they actually did the opposite. Okay, so our city council voted to affirm what the when that came to our city council. The way that works is with the area plan commission, it gets passed, and then each jurisdiction within the area plan actually votes on it also. So sometimes a lot of things that we get voted on, we vote on, doesn't actually affect the county or West Lafayette, or something the county does with agricultural land or something may not affect us, but we still have to affirm it or vote against it in that particular case. And when the wind farms came to our council voted for it except for one. There was one nay vote, but the rest of the council voted to support what the county had done and what the county commissioners felt was appropriate, on the lines that even though they're very supportive, and I'm very supportive of alternative energy sources, and we have smaller windmills at City Bus, we were concerned that particularly around the edges of Lafayette and far out, that with our growth, we think there could be higher and better uses than wind farms on those ground, and we want to make sure that we're not limiting our ability for economic development here in the county, particularly close to the city of Lafayette and close.
So I've heard that argument, and it was a very similar argument that Tom Murtaugh, the head of the county commissioners, made. I got to ask though, you're a city that's gotten investment from people like GE. They, of course, are very invested in alternative energy sources, wind included, going forward. Do you worry at all that you're sending a message to potential investors like that maybe this is not a place that you'd like to have investment come, or companies that are in that space?
You know, fair question. I don't think so. When they look at our overall environmental record and what we're doing and why we're, what our concern was, it wasn't like, you know, we don't like wind farms, we don't like in being good environmental stewards, we don't believe in alternative energy, we're concerned that we have a limited amount of developable land here, certainly within our transportation infrastructure footprint and for 21st century logistics, and you know, we just want to make sure that we are able to continue to develop that at the highest and best use. And but you know, because on a personal level, I very much support wind farms and alternative energy, but you do have to find that balance, and that balance for right here in Lafayette, I think, is the core is our advanced manufacturing base, and how that supports a lot of counties around us, and those jobs support a lot of counties around us, and that's kind of our niche, and you know, up in Benton County, it looks like a very good use, and but we're just trying to look at the whole picture.
All right, Mr. Mayor, that's the time we've got. Thanks as always for your time. We'll do it again next month.
All right, thanks, Dan.
This has been Ask the Mayor on WBAA. Remember to tune in this time next week for our conversation with Frankfurt's Chris McBarnes. I'm Stan Jastrzebski. Enjoy the rest of your day.
Support for WBAA comes from your membership and Encompass Credit Union, supporting Ask the Mayor and offering a full line of financial services to the people of Clinton and Tipton counties while supporting the communities they serve. More information at EncompassCU.org.